Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and practiced on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. High Truths is more than a podcast. It's a movement to unite physical, mental, and addiction health. It brings innovations to connect public health, public safety, and prevention. Our discussions inspire people to implement programs that save lives. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a 5-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Drug Free America Foundation, tackling the pervasive issue of substance use and its far-reaching impacts on individuals, families, and community. Drug Free America is supporting ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis, doctors and scientists educating on the harms of marijuana. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a prevention conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. Prevention as in let's prevent addiction. Instead of teaching about dangers of fentanyl or methamphetamine or cocaine, let's go upstream. Addiction is a pediatric disease. So let's start at birth with methods of staying healthy mentally and physically. Pregnant women know how to avoid alcohol and various chemicals to protect their unborn child. That protection should continue. My 2-year-old granddaughter has a sign on her preschool that reads calming strategies, and it lists take 5 deep breaths, let a grown-up know how you're feeling, draw a picture, take a break, drink some water, think of something that makes you happy, do some stretches. I just love that sign. These are life skills for 2-year-olds, and such life skills should continue throughout the school curriculum. And let's be frank, there are some adults who can use some calming methods and life skills as well. Studies have shown that kids who receive this type of life skills in schools have better academic achievement and decrease drug use. The cost of this type of education and skills is much, much less than the cost of treating addiction. Our drug mission should include saving lives, but it should also include creating the next generation of Americans that are resilient, know how to protect their brain, avoid Xanax, marijuana, or whatever the next temptation is. Who should be teaching prevention? Many people can. Specially trained prevention specialists are available around the United States. In San Diego, we're training our National Guard volunteers to implement a prevention curriculum. Another important and effective educators in prevention are law enforcement. To learn about drug prevention with law enforcement as lead, I've reached out to Nicholas DeMauro. Nick DeMauro is a national leader in law enforcement school-based prevention initiatives. He started his career as the youngest detective in the New Jersey Police Force to now being the executive director and CEO of LEAD, Law Enforcement Against Drugs and Violence. LEAD provides an evidence-based model that prevents violence, bullying, and substance use to youth and communities. To learn more about Nick DeMauro and LEAD, check out the High Truths show notes. Nick DeMauro, welcome to High Truths.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you, Dr. Lev.
No, this is great. And I always like to start our conversation with getting to know you. And you're in law enforcement. Policeman,
well, right? I've been in law enforcement probably now 45 years. It's kind of bizarre.
I know.
I'm not that old.
I know. It's funny. It's like me too. I want to say less. I've been a doctor for 30, 40. That sounds too old. when I was young, I wanted to make it sound longer. Now I want to make it sound shorter.
I can't speak for you, but a lot less hair, and thank God for hair dye.
Yeah. what made you want to go into law enforcement? Did you watch police movies as a child?
I have to tell you, I grew up in an old-fashioned Italian family. Born in the Bronx. My uncle was a lieutenant in the Paramus, New Jersey Police Department. And I was around cops every holiday when I was at his house. Half the police force were hanging around at the holiday table. And I got to know all of them and so on and so forth. And I think by the time I was 17, what happened at 17, the local police department started a program called Park Rangers, where they would hire, I guess, law enforcement wannabes to protect the schools. Because at the time, and this is in the late 70s, in the time of the late 70s, they started having a lot of vandalism. I mean, now we have murders at schools, right? Then it was just vandalism. They were breaking windows, and it was costing them a lot of money. So they came up with this Park Ranger program. And I got hired from the at the police department in 1978 and as a park ranger. And then I worked there. And at the time, believe it or not, Doc, it was $3.33 an hour.
That was good.
It was amazing, right?
Right. Babysitting was like a dollar an hour, right, in those days?
So then the Bergen County Police Department had a park ranger program, and that was kind of cool. That was, so I got hired there part-time for the summers, but that you can't make this stuff up. You would drive an actual Bergen County police car.
Right? As a kid?
And you wrote tickets. I'm 17 years old. It's amazing. But I will tell you, and I always tell this story, the first call I ever went on was in Rochelle Park, Dunker. I think it was O'Peely section of Rochelle Park. And I roll up on a guy whose leg was cut in two on a motorcycle accident in the park. And I was like, talk about reality check, you know? If I could draw, and trust me, I can't, okay? If I can draw, I can draw that scene right now, so many years later. So I worked there at the Bergen County Police for two or three summers. It was a great job, a little tough because you had to work every Saturday and Sunday, and you had to be in by 8 o'clock every day, every Saturday and Sunday. So it cramped your, you know, being an 18 and 19 year old, it cramped your style a little bit, having to be home early the night before because, you know, being single and stuff. So I worked there, and then in 1981, I got appointed as a police officer in New Milford, Bergen County. I actually ran into the mayor, the former mayor, who was a councilman at the time. 2 weeks ago, I was at an event in Atlantic City, and he ran up to me, gave me a big hug, and he said, "I'm the guy who made you." And it was Roger Lane. I'll send him a copy. He's a great guy. He's now a councilman in Wyckoff, New Jersey. And I started my career there as a patrolman. And I went on, and you know, after a couple of years, it was a great opportunity. Small little town, about 7 miles from the George Washington Bridge in New York City, right? And you know, it had its share of interesting crime. I one of the things I was most proud of when I first started in November, I didn't go to the police academy until January. And in two situations, I was involved in a police shooting. I was involved in the incident. I was not involved in a police shooting. One of my partners was injured and shot. And I was the first one on the scene. So here I am, you know, my first time in Bergen County Police. I get this guy severed his leg in half. Then I'm on a job a month and a half, and I roll up at 3 o'clock in the morning with one of my fellow officers shot. But Ronnie Bacher ended up finishing his career as a lieutenant, and he was fine. We never did catch the guy, though. We never did catch the suspect. But on top of that, I was, I saved a gentleman, myself and my partner, saved the gentleman from a burning apartment fire. And one of the things I'm proud of, I was the first police officer in the history of the Bergen County, New Jersey Police Academy to receive a medal at their graduation. So when I graduated from the police academy in March, you know, you're a recruit, right? So not many people get an award for being a hero at your graduation from the police academy.
In medicine, we call that a black cloud, where you have a black cloud where all the disasters happens on your
shoulders. Okay, maybe that's what it was, but you know, but it, from there, though, you know, after I have to say, Dr. Lev, after about 5 or 6 years, I said, "What am I doing?" You know, I'm in a 2.2 square mile town. Loved the town. I was on the football staff by this time, 1985, 86. I coached on 2 state championship football teams, 2 baseball teams, state championships. I was very active. I was the head by 88. I was the head baseball coach at New Milford High School. So, you know, I had a great life. I had this dual educational career. I was a police officer. I was by 88. I was the juvenile officer. I had a great career. But I was going to college at Rutgers University, and you know, I grew up in an old-fashioned Italian household. My father was a truck driver. My mother worked at the local Burger King, so I was the most popular kid in town because she used to always give everybody free hamburgers. So it was like, you know, it was a great life. But I said, where am I going? You know, I'm 28 years old. At the time, I was engaged, and I'm saying, what am I doing with my life? And so I stumbled upon the DARE program, and I looked at it, and at the time, I researched it, and I presented it to the mayor and council and to the town, and we were the first public a school district in the state of New Jersey that offered school-based policing in classrooms in New Jersey. So from there, I took the initiative, set up the training center there, set up an officers association, set up the governing body for there. And then the CEO of DARE many years ago, Glenn Levant, who's still with us, he's retired, living in New Mexico. I speak often to him. He brought me on, and I rose to one of the top executives there. But when he left, and it was a different philosophical take on that. And I became well known nationally and internationally as the guy with school-based law enforcement that wanted evidence-based, tested, proven, effective curriculum.
What does school-based law enforcement mean? I feel like it's kind of like what you were saying, that they hire like kids to make sure, no, I don't know, you're not breaking the law in school.
So, you know, when police officers in the 80s, in the early 80s, police officers were not in schools. It was not known for police. If there was a cop in a school, it was there to make an arrest or a first aid call. Right? That was it. So I think what the evolution of programs that brought into school where the police officer was in a classroom was totally virgin territory in this country. And that model, I think, is really successful, even to today. But I think the evolution went from being able to go into a classroom with a curricula, with a product. And one of the things that I've become internationally recognized for is we can't, at this stage in 2025, we can't just go into a classroom with any product. We need to make sure that it's tested, it's proven effective, just the same way a drug is through the FDA, is tested and proven effective.
Right.
And I think that's the evolution that I'm proud of with all of my involvement. And if you speak to some of the world's leaders, like Dr. Sloboda, or even Dr. Zila from Sanchez from Brazil, or some of the top researchers in the world, they'll tell you that Nick DeMauro really wants to push for making sure that we're teaching tested, proven, effective curricula around the country, around the world.
Right. So DARE is, even though you call it school policing program, it was a prevention program.
Correct. It was and still is, and that's what Lead is. I'm the CEO of Lead, and I can tell you what started that. But it is a school-based prevention initiative,
All
right?
right.
So what has evolved though, that prevention initiative has went into a more of a more it has evolved in many ways. One is the school resource officers. We work very closely. LEAD has a close partnership with the National Association of School Resource Officers.
So what is a school resource officer?
A school resource officer is someone that is specifically trained, and NASRO offers the 1 week training. It is specifically trained to go into schools. They act as security in the schools. They act as prevention specialists in the schools, and they're there to serve the school district. It's a whole
Are
evolution.
they the same thing as a drug prevention counselor?
No, not at all. They're not trained to be drug prevention counselors. However, there are some school resource officers that are trained as drug prevention counselor. But the basic model is, so let's say we have a school and they want an SRO, a school resource officer in its school. And that SRO will be the one in charge of the security for that school, but also do other things, get involved in community events, get involved in delivering evidence-based programs like LEAD, or the one I'm CEO of, Law Enforcement Against Drugs and Violence. So that has been the evolution of school-based policing, and I'm very proud of that. We just the United Nations. I sat on a task force with the United Nations out of Vienna, Austria, and they came up with a document that was just published on school-based policing and the need for prevention and the need for tested, proven, effective prevention. And I think that is where I'm excited for the future here.
Yeah, that's great. It's good to hear that the United Nations is thinking about that kind of stuff. I'm still well, let me ask you, I want to get into what LEAD is and what that program is, but I want to go more general first. Like, first of all, what is prevention? Is prevention the point is to prevent kids from using drugs?
Well, the problem with prevention, doctor, and you can probably attest to this a lot better than my background with you. You know, you're a medical doctor. I have a bachelor's degree, right? So, but being involved in prevention is something that we need to educate people to make good decisions. If how you demonstrate effectiveness is really tough. I mean, we all, and I'm not speaking for you, but I will speak for me. You know, in my lifetime, I've been faced with some very tough decisions. And I think I've done a pretty good job of addressing those situations. But there were times when I did not maybe do make the right decision. Okay? We've all been put in situations where things have happened in our lives. You know, did we, operate a car when we were borderline having alcohol in our system? Everyone has, been there, done that, right? But that's not a good decision. That's a bad decision, give an example. So we need to, so here I am later on in my life where I don't do that. You know, I know better. You know, but there are situations where, you get into a kid stuff. You get into a, when I grew up, it was normal. You know, on the street, you play football, ends up in a fist fight. You
Right.
know,
But I think that the evidence base that you said that you're, really proud of getting into the DARE program or any type of program, has a measurement. And I think the measurement is for primary prevention is.
That was why I left there and went to Lead, and because Lead has at at the time and still does, a great relationship with the Mendez Foundation, which is, I think, has the best curricula on the market. And it's K through 12, and it's tested, proven effective at various educational levels. What does that mean? It varies because there are different testing methods that are based on years as the evolution of testing goes. You know, they get stricter and more rigid and so on. But the rigorous nature of testing is very important. And there are other tests out there that are just not, like I saw one test that using virtual control groups, which, you know, I don't think that's proven effective.
But yet. What is it that they're measuring? Is it like abstinence of drug, alcohol, tobacco use until age 25?
Well, no, it's not that. It's you know, that's the problem. The different testing could be for 4 months, it could be 6 months, it could be a year. A lot of the times it's only a year test on a kid or a person. So, you know, it's you're not curing drug abuse. I hate to, you know, be this direct, but I don't think the war on drugs will ever end.
But I do think that there are programs that show longitudinally that if you implement life skills at a young age and continue that, you will have less drug use, higher academic achievement, and other, you know, desirable endpoints.
There is, but it's a matter of you know, how long that study goes, right? Now, life skills is a good program. The problem is it's been critical because of the owner of the curriculum wife's been the researcher, so it's conflicted. So there are different. There's a lot of different opportunities out there, but you know, you need to, as long as it's evidence based, I'm all for anyone doing anything.
Yeah. Now the DARE program got scrutiny. And says, oh, the program didn't work. Scaring kids doesn't work. That's the talking point. I don't know if that's true. I know plenty of people our age who saw, you know, pictures of black lungs, and they were like, I don't ever want to smoke. I don't want my lungs to.
I've heard, first of all, I don't like this. I used to work for DARE, so I don't like to talk about DARE, to be honest with you. Yeah. I will tell you that I think where DARE suffered is they didn't invest enough time and money into research to demonstrate effectiveness. So I think that it was a management issue there. But the DARE never used scare tactics, nor does LEAD or anyone else use scare tactics in his presentation. So I think school-based policing got a bad rap there, even, you know, to say that that was going on, you know, and at the time in the 80s when Nancy Reagan was pushing the Just Say No, it's a simplistic term. Now the big push is from the federal government is one pill can kill, right? Because of the whole fentanyl issue.
Yeah, the one campaign I've heard also is Just Say No, KNOW, like
right. So there are different things out there. That, and I think that programs that got bad reps, and you know, if I was critical of any program or anything like that, it is about the testing or the evidence-based nature of them. But from an effort perspective, I don't think it's fair to say that a program is stressing, you know, to do drugs. And I think that's the bad rap that. So.
Yeah. I think our country really needs to invest in primary prevention for youth. That's how we're going to create the next generation of Americans who are resilient from fentanyl or whatever the new drug du jour is. We have to create those skills. And addiction really is a pediatric disease. So at school, when you're young, is a time to invest in that. And
you're absolutely right. I think drug abuse is an important educational tool, a need, as math and English are, and maybe even more, because the high risk student isn't going to Harvard, right? I mean, myself, I couldn't get into Harvard, right? But you need to be able to make.
Sorry for the joke, but there is one way we could all get into Harvard. You know how?
Walking through the front door?
As a cadaver.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that's
my daughter. Yeah, this is a side joke, but my daughter used that joke for her medical school interview. She went in to Uniformed Services University, you know, military medical school, very uptight. You know, your medical school interview is very, you know, stressful. And one of the interviewers asked her, can you tell me a joke? And she answered, I don't need to tell you a joke. And he said, what do you mean you don't need to tell me a joke? And she goes, because I already got into Harvard. It's like, you got into Harvard? He goes, yeah, as a cadaver. Yeah, I think that sealed her admission.
but again, I think that it's important that we have tested, proven effective drug curriculums available to teach in schools throughout the country. For us, we use the Too Good for Drugs family curriculum, which I feel are the best. We have the most that are available to anyone. But our police officers, we're just not just, we'll go into lead a little bit here, Doc. We're not just a curriculum. We're much, much more than the curriculum. We are a 501c3 charity that develops the support mechanisms to give police departments the resources to promote and make them the best they can be in their communities. So we're not just in the classroom. We're on the street and in the classroom. And our mission is to stop drug abuse, deter drug-related crimes, stop bullying and violence. And again, as I mentioned, the fourth mission is to promote the resources that law enforcement agencies have to help communities.
So lead law enforcement against drugs, getting and violence. And well, I like it because it's several, many reasons. Again, we're getting primary prevention in schools. Who better to understand the prevention problem than the people who experience the, you know, downstream effects of that than law enforcement? And it's probably, I would hope that it brings back the pride that law enforcement officers should have in their profession. They are our nation's heroes. And the last few years, I feel like that's been attacked, but getting them role.
Not to get involved in politics, I think that the woke society way to the left has really caused a problem in this country. We need to be, I don't care if you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, we have to be common sense centrist. That's my belief. And, you know, it's I think we've gotten a little too progressive and aggressive. And I think, you know, bail reform has really killed us, hurt law enforcement. It's really, you know, we had an event. We ran a festival, and I had a bunch of unruly teenagers there, and they were berating the police officer. And I was standing right in the middle of it, and here I am, no gun, no badge anymore, right? Running this charity event, that I have a policeman standing to my right, and I'm surrounded by 50 youth who are right in our face. And they're screaming at the cop, yelling pig and all this kind of stuff. And myself and the officer were able to calm the situation down. Thank God for my training and his training.
And de-escalate
calm the situation down. But I turned to the officer and I said to him when we were done, I said, how did we walk out of there without making an arrest? And of course, by the time this thing escalated, it was probably 50 cops there. And he goes, you can't these days, because even if we arrest them, they'll be out on the street and the judge will just throw it out. It's not worth the effort of arresting people anymore. And that's sad because, you know, laws are designed, not all, they're done, it's not, we're not here to punish people. I agree with that. And maybe this is where I'm a little progressive. We're not here to punish people. We're here to rehabilitate people. However, some people need to be punished.
There has to be deterrence for crime. Otherwise, we don't have a good society and not a compassionate society, not to the victims and not to the perpetrators. You know, but it has to be just deterrence, but there needs to be deterrence.
I know we're filming this in for a 2025 broadcast, but for all the listeners out there, can go back a few months when we're right now when we're filming this and see the you know, the U.S. healthcare CEO that was murdered by someone who just who is a UPenn graduate, right? Who really, you know, how does that happen, right?
I think, well, we could talk about that and hypothesize that. I have a theory, and by the time this airs, the truth will come out, and I'll either be like, you know, an idiot for my theory. I suspect the young man who committed this murder, obviously a bright student, engineer, well-liked, got surgery, developed a chronic pain problem. And everybody says, oh, if you have pain, you should use marijuana. So he used marijuana and used a lot of it and developed psychosis. And that psychotic thought made him go after and act irrationally. And we saw that play out on TV where he's like calm and then screaming out. And to me, having seen lots of people with cannabis-induced psychosis, and hopefully he's young enough where that won't be permanent. But that's my theory. I could be proven wrong in a few months from now.
It's interesting, Doc. You know, we live in a society where, and this is a Democratic-Republican thing, right? The legalization of cannabis. And I live in two states. I split my time between New Jersey and Florida. Right now, at this point in my life, I am a registered voter in New Jersey, right? It's about to be switched to Florida, but hopefully by 2025, I'm in Florida, right? But I have a house in Naples, Florida. You talk about a adjusted position on two different polar extremes, right? You can't get more blue than New Jersey, and you can't get more red than Florida, right?
Yeah,
it's a whole philosophy, you know. It's a whole different ball game between the two, and it's crazy. But like, you know, there is medical dispensaries in Florida, but marijuana is not legal in Florida. Cannabis is not legal in Florida, but it is in New Jersey. And I have to tell you, Doc, it bothers me driving down Route 33 or 35 in towns like Shrewsbury or Neptune and seeing the giant cannabis stores. It really bothers me.
Well, because you're working in prevention, but you're working against those signs. How are kids going to get the right message when we have a whole industry fighting them, right? It's like, you know, trying to get kids not to drink alcohol with, you have, you know, alcohol signs and advertisements all over the place, right? How can you fight again?
But all substances, you know this, you're a doctor, I'm not, okay? All substances have consequences, right?
Yeah.
Alcohol, there are a ton of different consequences. You know, and I get this whole thing, well, what's the difference between cannabis and alcohol? And
Well, one is fat soluble and one is water soluble. Alcohol is water soluble. You get it out of your body in zero order kinetics very fast. And the other one is fat soluble, and the fattest part of your body is your brain, and it sticks around there longer.
Right. You're right. So, but to say that, you know, you're not impaired is ridiculous. You know, smoking cannabis. You know, I had a friend of mine who was a doctor. Okay. And I had to stop hanging around with him because he would not stop smoking cannabis. And at the time it was marijuana. Who ever heard the word cannabis 30 years ago?
Right.
But this guy became so addicted to marijuana that it evolved into cocaine. It evolved into, actually, when he cut the cocaine out and cut the, he had to stop the marijuana, he went to alcohol. Then next thing you know, he's in AA, you know? So they're all of these drugs are all controlling substances that affect the way your mind and body works.
Right. So are cops good educators for kids?
Well, I think that's an important question. And I think that's why, see, one of the things about our program that's different than anyone else is that we train them to implement a scripted curricula. Okay? We do not train them to be teachers. I don't think you can train a police officer to be a teacher unless they go through a four-year educational facility.
Right.
We train them how to work with a trained educator in a classroom and to read a scripted curriculum. And I think that's why everyone loves our curriculum. I think that's why we have great fidelity. We're going through a study right now at the University of Baltimore, and the results have been very good on teaching the curriculum the appropriate way. And I think that's the important thing. And to answer your question, can a cop be a teacher if they have the appropriate training?
Yeah. And so how does this work? You said that you have a curriculum, a community decides that there are a school. Is a school that says, hey, I want to do this LEAD program? Is that how it works?
Yes. So what we do is, let's say we're in Naples, Florida, because we just implemented in Naples, Florida, right? Mm-hmm. And the school district says, we want LEAD. They go to the police department. Can you help us out? What's unique about us that other programs don't have is we use police officers. As long as the police department, as long as the Naples, Florida Police Department is supporting and involved in the program, we'll train teachers, prevention specialists to work with that police officer in the classroom. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, we're delivering a scripted curriculum.
And how long, and what age group is this for, and how long is the program?
Curricula, kindergarten through 12th grade.
Okay, everything. And is it a year-round program, or is it a, you know, one-time lecture?
It's 10 lessons. We like to do it once a week for 10 weeks, but we will be flexible based on, there's vacations, there's holidays, you know, there's a lot of factors. So we don't want to spread it out over a school year. That's too wide of a path.
Yeah.
But we're flexible in doing it. That's what's making LEAD popular.
Yeah. And then who pays for it? How much does it cost?
Well, our goal, being a 501c3 nonprofit, is to provide it as cheap as possible. Which is, you know, in New Jersey, we have a grant from the State Department of Education that, you know, off we pay a minimal amount to do training. You know what's sad, Doc? Mm-hmm. It's really sad that if we did the training for free, we'd get 6 or 7 people who don't show up. If we charge, they all show up.
That's true. People have, but they value something that if you're paying for it.
So we charge minimally for the training. We give them a free kit. We give them free workbooks for the kids in New Jersey. And it's worked out great. And we're trying to follow that model throughout the United States. Right now, we just got two large grants, opioid grants out of Florida that we're doing that same model where it's going to be free. And that's our job. That's what makes LEAD different than just selling a product, you know. Yeah.
So how many schools or communities are you in right now?
Well, right now this year we trained 1,400 new instructors. We're broadcasting here at the end of 2024, so we still have a couple. So I don't have the exact number, but it's around 1,400 instructors this year, which is the best year we ever had programmatically.
And in how many schools are you in?
Well, I'll get there.
About, okay.
We estimate that we have 6,000 certified instructors in the United States. We feel that we're in over 3,000 schools throughout the United States. We have certified instructors in 46 out of the 50 states. So that equates to a couple hundred thousand kids.
Wow, that's great. And then when you go in, are you K through 12 or you just pick some grades?
That's an interesting thing. We don't dictate anything. It's up to the school district's environmental analysis of what they want to do. So in Naples, they may say we want to do it in the third grade. In Fort Myers, we may say we're doing it in the seventh grade. In Newark, New Jersey, they may want to do it in kindergarten.
Do they do it only one time or is it continuous throughout?
It depends. It's all over the spectrum. We promote.
What's the best?
The best would be as much as possible. The more drug prevention you can get, the better. The more math you get, the better. The more science education, the better. Yeah. It's like life. The more you do something, the better it's going to be.
Yeah, that's interesting. Any pushback that you have?
Yes, we're getting pushback in woke communities that don't want cops.
It's so funny because I just talked to a group of police officers from Massachusetts. And they were implementing, not prevention, they were doing drug rehab, okay, sobering centers, where they provide for free to people who are very much at risk, who otherwise would be in jail, sobering for not what the insurance companies paid for 30 days, but for 49 days. They do it for free with their own program. They use professionals. They're not, cops are not doing detox, but it is a police-run program. And their pushback is from certain people in the population who says that's a cop program. We don't want it. Even it's for free. The medical community is not doing it. The public health community isn't doing this. This is a need that is being seen by law enforcement. More and more that I talk to communities around the United States, law enforcement feels that they fix a problem in the community, such as what you're doing, prevention or detox, that the rest of the community is not doing. And I was like flabbergasted that just because it's from cops, they don't want it.
Yeah, it's a society issue that we have. It's problematic. And, you know, even our current, you know, at this time, I know it's 2025 when it's going on the air, but you know, the Biden administration, okay? Joe Biden, years ago, was so pro-cop. He's a different guy today. It's the party is taking over for the guy.
It's the guy, but it's also the time, right? Like you were saying yourself, you were a hero. You wanted to be a cop as a kid because that was the hero. Your dad was the hero. And now, we're not seeing that, right? I mean, I was thinking when you told the story about that cop who, you know, in this mob around you, and here's a young cop just trying to do his job. I was like, why would people want that job? You know, no, they need right. more. I think they need more love and support.
It's a different cop. And even today, the cops, the law enforcement, first of all, one of the positive steps that law enforcement has done is the evolution of the female officer. I think that's fantastic. When I went through the police academy, I don't believe I had one female officer in the 60, some odd people in our class. I may be wrong. I just don't remember having one officer. The next time I go to the police academy, I'm going to look on the wall. They have the plaque with everybody's name on it. But I will tell you that the evolution of the police female in police work has been tremendous. And I think that's a great thing for law enforcement. I think the negative, you know, when I became a police officer, I remember if you had a tattoo on your arm, you had to always wear a long sleeve shirt. They wouldn't let any tattoos exposed on a male officer. Now, male, female, they're tatted all over the place.
Yes.
You know, I remember an officer came to work one day with an earring in his ear. And the chief, I thought the chief, my chief of police was going to have a heart attack. He called the guy in, get that out of there. What are you doing? You know, it's life has changed.
Yeah.
Things have changed. Some for the better, some for the worst.
Oh, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just saying.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's like, you know, hey, we never had electric cars in 1981 either, right?
Now, when I looked at your website and you know, looked at the curriculum, your goals, again, much more than drugs. It's mental health, like you said, bullying, suicide, social media, apps. But you also had celebrities. One that stood out to me was Joe Piscopo, because I just loved him on Saturday Night Live. So is he doing this kind of work or promotion for you?
Joe is one of our national ambassadors. Actually, we had our recognition event on Friday night, and he showed up.
That was so cool.
Yeah, he did it. He did a great job. Joe's a fantastic guy. He has a radio show on AM 970, The Answer, which is the same radio that we're on.
Yeah.
I have my own show, Battling Drugs and Violence with the Lead Guy. Yep, that's me, Nick DeMauro, the lead guy. And Joe Piscopo's been on our show, and he's I go on his show a couple times a month. He's really a bright guy, very conservative, and he's really a good guy.
Yeah, I saw that just because it's like, well, that was my generation for Saturday Night Live.
You'll see him. He comes to our conference every year and broadcasts live from the conference. So when at our conference this year, you'll meet Joe.
That's great. What now? You teach life skills in your curriculum. I'm wondering if there's.
It is a life skills curriculum. You know, that's another thing that has evolved that I want to talk about briefly. Is what is the makeup of a evidence-based curriculum? And in some states, they do not want social emotional learning. They feel that that's woke. And in other states, they want character education, but not social emotional learning. But the skill set for both of those iterations are very close, you know, and it becomes problematic in some areas. And, you know, I think.
Can you give me an example? Like, can you give me an example of a skill or social emotional learning or character? Like, what's.
Understand more feelings oriented. Understanding a person's feelings, you know, so let's say, you know, it's a bad decision. It's good character to promote resistance skills, understanding how to say no, how to refuse appropriately, communication. Okay, so it's, you're either, you know, we always tell this, there's the timid person. There's the aggressive person, you know, how do I say no to an offer? Nah, you know, I'm kind of shy, or no, I'm going to kill you if you ask me that question once more time, or be assertive and tell them, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. Right. So that would be a character education thing. An emotional thing would be more like being empathetic and being, you know, I understand. How you want me to do that. Maybe I'll, it's a philosophy. It's a technique, but they're close. It's very close, Doc. It's hard to differentiate.
That's great. And, you know, why don't you put a plug in for your own show? You said Battling Drugs and Violence, the lead guy.
Yeah. So by the time 2025 is, we're going to take a hiatus on the show and we're going to start a podcast with the lead, actually with the lead kid, my son, who is a head of social media for us, vice president of social media for Lead, he's been co-hosting Battling Drugs and Violence with me. And he's going to take a more active role, but only because I'm tremendously busy, and it's tough getting the time to do this type of stuff, as you know, with your show.
Is he a police officer too?
No, he's just been around it for years, but he's very bright. He graduated with a baccalaureate degree from a private school up in Vermont, and actually did some college, but he wants to head out in this field. So I'm giving him the break. He does a good job, and he's going to handle the podcast, which we're still working on, but it's going to be the same title, Battling Drugs and Violence.
That's awesome. I've used all my kids as quote unquote slave labor for my projects throughout their childhood.
How many children do you have without getting personal?
I have four, and two of them are military doctors. So
wow.
they went that. But as they were growing up, whatever little research project, data crunching, whatever their skill set, I used it for my work. So they got involved in that.
Well, you can see how that happens, right?
Yeah. What about people are listening to this podcast and they say, hey, I want that program in my school. Can they contact Lead? Absolutely. Is it a school or is it a community? Who should be calling you?
Anyone could call us, because what we do is if we get a contact, say a parent calls us, we will call the police chief and say, Dr. Lev called me from your town. She's from your town and she would like Lead in there. What can we do to help you get Lead? You know, and being a 501c3, we can give them a grant. We can try to do an event there to raise money if they don't have the money. So there's a lot of different things we can do. But you can go to our website, leadrugs.org, leadrugs.org. You can go to our Facebook page, Law Enforcement Against Drugs and Violence. We are Lead is our Twitter account. So, or X, whatever it's called now. And we have a lot of different platforms, but just Google us. We work very hard. We have SEO. And if you Google Lead Drug Prevention, it'll come up very easily.
That's great. And final words of advice. I know this will air in 2025. We're recording December 2024. But what is your advice to the new administration?
The new administration, my advice would be to make sure you reinstitute evidence-based programming in schools throughout this country. I think that's necessity. And I think you have to, you really need to take a look at this cannabis issue. I really do believe it's more problematic than, I think it's going to be long-term political football for many, many years. And I think just like different issues such as abortion or anything like that, I think this cannabis issue is going to become more problematic over time. It's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. All right, Nick DeMauro, thank you so much for your time. Shout out to our friend who connected us, previous drug czar, Jim Carroll.
Jim Carroll.
Yeah. Shout out to him. And thank you so much. Continue to doing this great work. And I want to see prevention in all public schools, private schools, and homeschools. I think these are skills that we need our kids to do.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dr. Lev.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor, a sincere and warm thank you to Drug Free America Foundation. Visit DFAF.org. And ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis. That's IASIC1.org. High Truth's producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.